Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. And indeed, we're recording. So yes, welcome. And to The Clearing today, ladies and gentlemen, delighted and very excited to bring an adorable, lovely man, Mr. Paul Hill, into The Clearing. Good morning, Paul Hill.
Morning, Chris. Thanks very much. You're too kind.
Brilliant. We've had a little bit of comedy with our connection today, but hey, welcome to the new world order.
It's men in their 50s trying to deal with Zoom. And I've just bought a new laptop and, oh, dear.
Absolutely. So I Googled you just before we started today. And at first, I slightly regretted it because the first hit is Paul Hill still alive? But I can attest that you are, which I'm thrilled about. You share the same namesake, as you may or may not know, with a US music producer, now sadly deceased, but that's no relation. And then also, the second entry was that you served 15 years for a bombing you didn't commit. So I'm very sorry I Googled you, but the good news is I then put Paul Hill voice coach into Google, and then the world opened up on this glorious vista of a glorious man.
Marvellous. So, yeah, I mean, it's the danger of having quite a common name. You know, there's lots of Paul Hills out there. So, you know, it's something I've wrestled with all my life, really. And knowing that people will either mistake me for an American anti-abortion activist or one of the Guildford Four. So that was the Paul Hill.
So you're an illustrious company. And in fact, just to suddenly bathe you in the smoke of brilliance you deserve, I feel in illustrious company when I work alongside you in Working Voices. We have that in common. You're always been, for me, I've always regarded you as being the wise sage. Not that I'm trying to age you, because I think I'm probably older than you. But you've been there about 16 years and me 10. So we have that in common. So we'll obviously talk about our joy of working for the mighty Working Voices.
Absolutely.
As well. So how's today going for you? What's the story of Paul Hill over this past weekend?
Over the past weekend, yes, fine actually. I mean, it was relatively technology free, which is good. I mean, I kind of quite liked having to talk to people as we're talking today. I never thought I would, but the weekend is generally a bit of downtime when I'm not having to Zoom all the time, which is great. And everything's going fine until this morning, and I try to make my newfangled technology work, and it doesn't. And suddenly, I mean, you know, you talk about being in the clearing, and suddenly I find myself in the woods again, and all the different sort of distractions and all the different worries and fears jump in. So it's lovely to do this on a Monday morning, because I do feel fresh and ready, but it reminds you of how quickly things can get in the way if you let them.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's a lot of people be able to relate if they're listening to this about how, you know, it can feel like you're stuck in the woods having been in the clearing.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about your clearing then. So the clearing is a metaphorical space open for your interpretation. Where would you say Paul Hill goes in order to get clutter-free, innovative, and just to be at peace so you can inspire those that you like to work with?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I mean, I think, and I've talked all the way through my sessions when I've been chatting to people about this sort of stuff, about the importance of exercise. And really, I think my clearing is the state where I'm no longer thinking about thinking, but I'm just thinking. And I tend to get there by doing something relatively physical and relatively simple that's physical. And if I can get into the zone doing that, then I find myself thinking in a much more productive way. So say I've got to structure a course or write something, I find I probably do my most constructive thinking either when I'm swimming or, as I've done for the last 6 months, when I'm walking.
And have you managed to get back into the pool in the New World Order, or still not?
No, yet? No, I haven't. My wife has, but it involves booking ahead and scheduling, which I'm not really very good at. And so I haven't managed it. We have an outdoor pool just down the road, which is Brockwell Park Lido, which is where I tend to go and swim and think. But luckily, we live in a very leafy part of London. It's one of the things I'd never really noticed before the last 6 months. I mean, I had, but I hadn't.
Yes, sure.
But there's lovely places to go within sort of 15 minutes walk, right? And I know exactly where I'm going, and I can just walk and ponder stuff. And that's what gets me into the clearing, even when I'm in Dulwich Woods and Sydenham Hill Woods, which I really like to go to. And I'm, you know, when you mentioned the clearing, I instinctively thought about that. I'm very literal.
No, I love that. Horrible. So if I may, I'm going to now come into your metaphorical clearing and I'm going to bring a tree with me. And if we're in Dulwich Woods, that's fantastic. And we're going to use some storytelling archetypes to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. First of all, though, if you want to just answer the question, if someone just approaches you in the woods before we shake your tree and says, excuse me, what do you do? What's your favourite way of either avoiding that question or answering it?
I mean, it used to be I'm a voice teacher, but then people say, oh, what, singing? And you think, oh, no, I don't teach people to sing. I'm not a very good singer myself. So, I mean, my stock answer to it now is I help people communicate, whether they are actors, because I've spent a lot of my career training actors, using their voices to their best effect, or non-actors, the majority of my clients at the moment, how you use your voice, body language, facial expression, and then the structure of your message and your connection with your audience to get what you want to say across to people in the most effective and interesting way possible.
And you have been a voice teacher for, I'm guessing, over 12 years at Lambda, but yeah. How long had you been there for?
I was there for 14 years.
Wow.
I was there for 14. I updated my LinkedIn profile this morning to say that I am no longer there, but I was there for 14 years, and I taught for 2 years elsewhere before I started at Lambda. So I've been a voice teacher for 16 years, and I was communicating with a friend from my course, my voice teacher training course, yesterday, and he said, you know, it's 17 years since we were at Central, and it's one of those moments where you think, oh God, really?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Oh, gosh, and we have that in common too, because you two trained at the Central School as well, didn't
you? That's right. Yeah, yeah. Yes. And you were on. Were you on the acting course there? Did you do?
I was on the B.Ed. Honours teaching.
That's right.
Course, 82 to 86. And what was your time there?
I was there from 2000 and. Oh God! Now you've got me. No, it's 2003 to 2004. I was there.
And were you doing the voice specialism course there?
Yes, that's right. Yes. I did an MA in voice studies. Lovely. Because, I mean, the way it worked is I'd started working for Working Voices. So I've actually worked for Working Voices for 18 years. Nick Smallman, who runs the company, was a friend of mine at drama school. And he phoned me up one day in 2002 and said, do you want to come and do some work for me? I remember you spoke really clearly at college. Do you want to come and do some teaching? Because I've got a client who needs some work on articulation. And I just thought, why not? And then, of course, all the other thoughts come in sort of, what? I mean, I may speak clearly myself, but can I teach it? But I started doing it, and I started coaching one-to-one clients. And I thought, this is great, this is brilliant, but do I really know what I'm talking about? And have I really got a methodology? And that's why I ended up going to Central, because I thought I need to spend a bit of time actually working on this and thinking about it. And when I went on that course, I never intended to teach at a drama school. I always thought, I've been an actor, I'm done with that, I am now going to be a corporate coach and work with non-actors. But then, sure enough, as a result of being on that course, where you get lots of work experience at drama schools, I was offered a job at a drama school, and that's how I ended up doing that. So yes, it's a weirdly sort of tangled route into doing what I do now.
And isn't that interesting about how windows of opportunity can sometimes be on a really lubricated hinge? So Nick Smallman is obviously quite epicentric to just certain windows that opened and choices that he began to make.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you know, I was thinking about morals, and we'll talk about that later, and mottos and things. But yeah. You know, one of the best decisions I ever made was saying yes to him that day when he phoned me up, because I'm quite a cautious person, and lots of times through my life I'd probably have said no. I don't really know it, but something about it made me think, well, why not?
Yes.
Why not do it, you know?
And that's so relatable in what we share in common, obviously working voices, but also I love comedy improvisation, and the whole mindset of yes and is just say yes more.
Yes.
And it can open up all sorts of opportunities and pathways.
Yeah, because you never know, do you? And you can have a very fixed idea of yourself and what you're going to be good at. And it's something I was thinking. I mean, it's really interesting doing this chat, because it's something I've been thinking about, is where does your idea of yourself come from? And for me, it's almost certainly as much from other people as it is from me. And so then talking about yourself, it's one of the reasons I've always found it difficult.
Yes. And in fact, I have you to thank, actually, for the early genesis of this idea. Because, you know, in the many, many meetings we've had, and I genuinely find you really, really adorable. There was a moment when your head and hit your palm, and you said, I don't want to promote myself. I want other people to help me promote myself. And I said, gosh, all I've got to do is bring this lovely man into a clearing. And actually, that's the metaphor. So thank you sincerely.
I know, but I think the thing is, I tend to find this much easier as dialogue than as monologue, and certainly social media and things like that can feel a bit too much like monologue to me. It's sort of, here's another thing about me, and here's another thing about me.
Yes.
If you make it dialogue like we're making it today, then it's much easier. It's much easier. And I suspect that's true for a lot of other people, actually.
Well, all good theatre is when people are really good listeners, and actually it's all about the dialogue, and it's about the relationship. And my favourite quote, you know, it's all about the relationship, stupid, is exactly this.
Yeah, totally. So yes, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. And our work, of course, is about those relationships. I mean, you form these very intense relationships with coaching clients.
Yes.
Or with people you're training in a very short and concentrated time. And you're working together very, very closely. And it involves an awful lot of effort and an awful lot of listening, but at its best, an awful lot of give and take.
Yes.
I think at its best, we can do some quite profound work with people pretty quickly, but you need to be sort of firing on all cylinders to do it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
You need to be really, truly present and able to listen to what they might need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the thing we aspire to in the theatre all the time. It's the thing we aspire to in training all the time. You don't always get it.
Yes.
You know, and maybe it's sort of chemistry in the audience, in yourself, in your reaction to them that enables you to find that. Really, the quest for all of us is to find it. And, you know, find something that can enable you to access it, even for a moment in a course or in a session, or, you know, for our clients when you're really presenting to people and really talking to people. And that's really difficult. It's really difficult.
And I've heard it defined, and I'm using it myself as a sort of methodology because I heard about it and read about it and agreed about it. It's the sort of alchemy of where you find the gold in the moment when you truly connect.
Yes. Yes.
And my favourite actors, and I know we have this in common, not necessarily this man I'm about to say, but the best actors we've always experienced are those that are just really good listeners and spend their time on stage making sure others look and feel good with their quality of their listening.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you see it in so many people who are absolutely brilliant and appearing to do nothing. Of course, they're doing an awful lot. But it's that ability to put your ego to one side. Mm. And recognize that by listening to somebody, you are part of something bigger than you. It's really hard. Just to say that actors don't have egos and the best actors don't have massive egos, because of course they do, but it's in that quality of sometimes being able to put yourself aside or being able to put your agenda aside so that you can really engage with somebody else that makes you really compelling.
Who would you say one of your favorite actors is? I've got an actor in my mind, and I just need to ask you the same question. Who's one of your favourite actors or actresses?
I was watching. What's it called? Ready Player One, the Spielberg film, and Mark Rylance is in that, and he is probably my favourite actor of the moment, just because of his capacity, his amazing capacity to create something afresh.
Paul, right. I nearly bit my microphone at that point. There's such synergy there because absolutely boom, Mark Rylance was the man in my head.
I mean, he is amazing because he's always on the verge of he always seems to be on the verge of completely messing it up and losing the plot in a quite delightful and charming way. But you know, I've seen him on stage. I saw him playing Richard II and Richard III at the Globe, and both times he found things in those characters which were absolutely extraordinary. And it's the point of being almost out of control, right? But also thoroughly engaged with your audience and thoroughly in the moment. And probably the most extraordinary thing I've seen him do was as Olivia in Twelfth Night, as the Countess in Twelfth Night. Absolutely extraordinary performance, extraordinary piece of acting, and of course Jerusalem in Jez Buswell.
I saw that, right. Absolutely.
If you see him doing one and then the other, you wouldn't think it's the same person, and there's no greater tribute than that. But of course, you know that the same art's at work. And phenomenally exciting. I was lucky enough to see the first performance of that. I was at the first night. And
the first night of Twelfth Night, you're talking there?
No, first night of Jerusalem.
Yes.
And just had that extraordinary end where he's banging his drum and summoning the spirits of old England. And then at the end, there was just dead silence. The lights went down and there was dead silence. Nobody did anything. Nobody did anything. Everybody was sort of shell-shocked. And it's very rare that you hear that in a theatre or amongst a group of people where there is just silence and everybody's just absolutely in that extraordinary moment. And then everybody started clapping and cheering.
It's a moment of pure rapture, isn't it, when you're just utterly engaged.
Yes, and when you're taken somewhere you didn't think you would be by something. Incredibly exciting because it took a while to grow on me that show because there were two intervals in it, and at the first interval I was saying to people it's all right, and a very old friend of mine was saying this is the best thing he's ever done, and then I saw Act Two. We came out for the interval after Act Two, and I was thinking this is really going places. This is amazing, and then by the end of Act Three, you think wow, this is the best thing I've ever seen. So. We talk about impact in our work. Now, what's interesting there is it's about the kind of impact you have and sort of how people realize you're having impact on them, and it can creep up on you. And that was really interesting.
I love that expression too, the fact that excellence can creep up on you sometimes.
Well, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're running a persuasion course, then you know you're persuading somebody and you know you're being persuaded. If you're influencing people, then it's far more subtle and you realize that you're being influenced afterwards, which is a rather strange thing. I mean, it's close to manipulation, isn't it? But it's that's the really fascinating thing. And maybe with that influencing you, it's that much more powerful because you feel part of it.
Yes.
And you've been part of it. That was extraordinary. I mean, he really is the most, he brings a bit of magic to everything he does, I think.
And what I love, by the way, is we did not plan that. And we were absolutely at one, talking about the same individual in our head. And I don't know if you've heard, before we'll just finish off, but about Mark Rylance and his wonder, his gloriousness. But I don't know if you heard his Desert Island Disc episode. He was mute,
probably.
I gather, right. Until he was about 4 years old, which is partly where his acute ability to listen brought about, probably. And it's an extraordinary episode, and I just encourage anyone listening to just go and find that.
Yeah, yeah, he's an amazing guy, amazing guy.
So I love the riff on that, and Stephen Fry was one of my favourite linguists in how he uses languages and language, and he was in Twelfth Night too, wasn't he? I'm gathering.
He was, yeah. He was Malvolio. Yeah. He was Malvolio. Yes. Brilliant. I mean, yeah, it's phenomenal production and brilliant actors, and Stephen Fry was very unsung in that production. I thought he was really, really good.
Yeah.
He was really good.
So thank you for that lovely riff on a theme that we neither of us were expecting that. And I really enjoyed that. So now we're back, finally, back out of the woods, that glorious sidetrack, back into the clearing, which could be Dulwich Woods or a place of your choice. And we've now got a tree, Paul. We're going to shake your tree to see which apples fall out. And before you join the programme, as you know, you are given 5 minutes or as long as you needed to think about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention, and one quirky or unusual fact about you, the lovely Mr. Paul Hill, we couldn't know about you until you tell us. Don't panic, Mr. Mannering. You don't have to download the whole exercise, but which of those apples would you most like to talk about?
I mean, I don't mind talking about all four of them. I mean, you know, because I made myself a list because I really had to sit down and think about this.
The floor is yours.
The four things that shaped me, really interesting. I mean, I guess everybody says this, but fundamentally, it was my parents and my relationship with my parents, fundamentally shaped who I am and how I saw the world. Luckily, I had very, very loving parents, very caring parents who always supported me. I think the key fact for both of them is that neither of them had ended up doing what they wanted to do. Neither of them got to university. They always felt the lack of that very acutely. They felt the lack of parental support in pursuing what they really wanted to do. Certainly my mother felt that. She loved her parents deeply, but she wanted to be a nurse and they didn't want her to do that. So they were always incredibly supportive of me and my brother in doing whatever we wanted to do. And they never said, don't do that. Now, I maybe if my mum had told me, had sort of kindly advised me to stop being an actor before I did, because I spent far too long trying to do it, it would have been helpful. But that was fantastic. And their support from both of them shaped me massively in terms of choices. I mean, they both imbued me with that massive sense of caution I was talking about beforehand that I've kind of had to fight against. But also that feeling of security.
I love the idea of your mum allowing you to sort of let your own kite string out to find your own destiny, as opposed to yank the string in quicker than you might know.
Yeah, because I talk to people I've talked to clients regularly about it, whose parents sort of definitely said, you've got to do this and make sure you do this, and that wasn't good enough. And that's always terribly difficult for people to navigate afterwards. So that definitely is a fundamental thing that shaped me. The other thing, I mean, one of the other fundamental things is that I'm really a very shy person. And so many of my life choices were sort of determined by that, and very socially underconfident, I think. And so, my initial choice to begin with was to sort of be as unobtrusive as possible and not put my hand up, because when I did, people teased me. So I kept as quiet as possible. And my reports always said, well, you know, I'm sure he's great, but who is he? And that took me an awful long time to negotiate. And so whenever I'm with a reticent client or a shy client, I can honestly say to them, you know, it may not look like it because I'm running this course, but I know exactly how you feel. That's what got me into acting. And the moment I stood on a stage for the first time, auditioning for a school play when I was nine, it was like getting a surge of electricity up my legs and into my body. It was extraordinary. It's that moment of sort of standing there and then being able to access a voice that came out of my mouth and feel totally, totally comfortable. It was very weird. And it would have been the last thing that I'd have wanted to do. But I think, again, I think my mum sort of said, put your name down for that. Why don't you try that? You've never tried that. Why don't you do that? And that really changed my life.
So your mum doing that wonderful thing of just enigmatically nudging you along because she knew best.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And just sort of doing that.
I hope you won't mind me saying, but there's an extra poignancy to what you're talking about, because you have quite recently lost your mum, I know.
That's right, yeah. So she died last December. Both my parents have gone now. So she died in December, just before Christmas, just pre-COVID. As I've said to people, I'm very sad she died, but I'm very grateful that it happened before all of this, because it would have been absolutely awful for her. So yes, that's been one of the things I've been doing recently is clearing out her belongings. And of course there's terrible poignancy in that. And that's quite a tough thing to do while you're doing all the other stuff. So those are two things that fundamentally shaped me. I was lucky enough to go to Cambridge. I went to Cambridge at a time when you didn't have to pay for your higher education. Remember, we always need to bear that in mind. And where I did tons of plays, And I met lots of the people who were probably still my closest friends. And that was the first time where I'd really felt comfortable and really felt like I could be me, and I didn't have to apologize for being me. And yeah, that was phenomenal, really, in terms of what I thought I might want to do with my life. I'm still not quite sure what I want to do with my life, but it gave me lots of options and a window. And it's the nice feeling that you get at working voices at the best time, when you think, well, I'm with like-minded people who are also fundamentally different, and creative people, and people who are really on top of their game, if you like, who will get the best out of me. So it's those collegiate experiences. And then the final shaping things, meeting my wife and having a family, because my own family background was loving but troubled. And I'm sure you'd agree with this, the experience of sort of, you know, getting together with somebody, creating your own family, is fundamentally sort of shaping. And of course, everything comes back to that, really. Most important thing in my life.
How many children, just for the listeners, do you have?
Two girls, 14 and 11. So a fully fledged teenager and a might as well be a teenager. In a one bathroom house, Chris.
We have that in common as well.
I won't comment. You've got one of each, and that's the challenge. I do feel slightly outnumbered in the house. There's my wife, my two daughters, a female cat. We have a neutered tomcat, so it's him and me sometimes.
So everyone has been immaterrated by, well, if that's the right word, because you've had your tomcat muted as well.
Yeah.
This is lovely, by the way. So just keep letting your thinking unfold. We're now on to three things that inspire you, I believe.
Three things that inspire me. Yes. Well, again, it's close to home. I mean, probably my wife's integrity. She has and I said this when we got married. We got married relatively late after the kids had arrived. But she has more integrity than anybody else I know, and it's great to live with somebody who stays true to their ideals so much, because so much of life is compromise, and she's there just not you know, she doesn't compromise in the way that lots of people do. Yeah, she will say stuff, and certainly that sort of moral guiding sense, without her being a pious person at all, is very powerful. And then if I see my daughters, especially my older daughter Zoe, trying to tackle a problem, her ingeniousness and her focus and her dedication to the task is absolutely amazing. She has the sort of mind of an engineer mixed with an artist, and that's something to behold, really. And you think, wow, you know, and from an early age she was like that, and phenomenally creative, and phenomenally methodical as well, which is something I guess that we draw on a lot when we're coaching people. And my younger daughter is simply one of the funniest people I've ever met. She just has funny bones, and her ability to come up with something and be really present and be really engaged is fantastic. So I get my inspiration from the three of them, I think.
There's a lovely thing about your vibe attracts your tribe. And I noticed in life that what we are attracted to, we tend to resonate with. And if I may, you have you just do have, in the experience I've worked with you, a deep, deep, deep integrity. And also you're very, very opinionated. You're someone who has a very acutely attuned for the Working Voices tribe. You have a really good bullshit-ometer. And I've laughed long and loud, sometimes when we were off the call, at just how incisive the sort of moment of explosion was. And you are really in control, but when you have a controlled explosion, it's actually a thing to behold, and there's normally immense depth to what it is you're deciding to take umbrage with.
I mean, I think obviously the challenge there is sort of managing it so that you don't hurt somebody unnecessarily, and so I always try and remain aware of that, and always try and talk to people afterwards if I've said something, so it remains supportive.
It's because you are also a very, very kind man, so you just are, so all those qualities are just delicious in you.
Chris, I'm blushing. I'm glad my headphones are on, because everyone my ears going red.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. the station that makes you feel good.
So when I think we've done the three things that inspire you, now it's two things that never fail to grab your attention.
I think, and this ties in with stuff we were talking about before, but I think it's when somebody's talking about something that they know tons about, but they're able to communicate it to people and they're able to sort of share their enjoyment. So they're talking about it as if they've only just started doing it, you know, and that's incredibly impressive. So it's that ability to sort of get into the zone that we were talking about earlier. Because when you're in the zone, you're really there and you can find the words to convey what you want to. But also it's presence, because that presence thing, that listening thing we were talking about in terms of Mark Rylance is so important, because if you've been able to listen to somebody and get a sense of what they're interested in, then of course it's much, much easier to engage them and talk to them. Mm-hmm. And it's that sense also of spontaneity. So you know, you have an idea of what somebody's going to say, but you don't know quite how it's going to go or how they might shape it, depending on what you're going to ask them or depending on what they pick up from you.
And again, there's a delicious resonance there, because that's what I know. I remember you saying that's what you admire so much about Mark Rylance. He's on the edge of about to lose control, but regain control, lose control, regain control. He's always falling upwards towards the performance.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And he has that amazing sense. I mean, the words are there. The script is set. Right. But he has a brilliant ability to seemingly improvise around what he's doing. Now, I don't think he is fundamentally losing control, but I think he's sort of playing with himself and going towards the point where he might. And I guess it's the same with us, you know. So when we're running a course, for instance, I mean, I think the way it works best is when you say what you want to and you get the information across to people, but it happens in a unique way for that crowd of people.
And indeed, the word play is beautiful in that, because we're there to be playful still, even though you might have actually, other actors, lesser mortals, might lock off their performance and that's the play I'm in. But there's this joy, play, presence, which is just beautiful, which it's resonates in our work too, I get.
Oh, totally. And it's that element of improvisation, I think, that is at the heart of this.
And you're pushing on an open door. I love comedy improvisation, as you well know.
So it's brilliant. But it's improvisation, and it's being ready. It's being ready not to be in total control.
Risk, to take risk.
Just to risk it and see where something goes. And which, if it doesn't work, fine.
Links to my favourite quote of late about how to rehearse properly, and it's prepare for variety, don't practice for perfection.
Totally right. Totally right. I've had some very painful experiences with clients where they've gone for interviews and they have just gone down the perfection route, and they're looking for their best way of saying something, and they just kind of freeze up when they're in the moment, because they're trying to find the perfect way to say something rather than sort of be in the moment and trust themselves. It's very hard, especially if you're underconfident.
Yes, I'm glad. So practice, prepare for variety, don't practice for perfection is the topic we both have in there.
I love it.
So we're away from, is that the two things that never fail to get the attention?
Yeah, those are the two things.
Boom. And then now, and by the way, this is all delicious stuff, and this is segueing beautifully into what's coming next, which is alchemy and gold, which we've been resonating with about anyway. But what's one quirky or unusual fact about you, Mr. Paul Hill, we couldn't possibly even now know about you until you tell us?
Well, I was talking to my wife about this earlier, and she said, oh, you're going to mention the brain operation, aren't you? Because I had a brain operation when I was 24, and I don't know if you can see on you can see the scar there, and there's a sort of rather shapely dent in my head. That was, in a sense, a really very sort of formative and shocking experience. Brush with mortality when I was 24. So that's one thing. But because I have slightly less hair than I did at that time, I don't think that's necessarily an unsurprising fact. You'd look at my head and think, there's something going on there, though most people are too polite to ask.
By the way, in a much kinder way, I've always looked at your head knowing there's something going on in there, because this man is a deep individual. But and do you mind me asking, what was the condition you had at 24?
Well, I was told it was a brain tumour. But it turned out to be a sort of blood clot. I think I'd fallen out of bed when I was 14 and banged my head and developed a blood clot, which then burst when I was 24, which coincided with my first acting job after leaving drama school.
And did the show go on, or it can't have done?
Well, the show was over. The show had finished, and then I had this brain hemorrhage. I was extremely fortunate. Wow. I was extremely fortunate that they just really introduced MRI scanners. They were brand new when I had my operation. Yeah. Extremely fortunate that it was on the surface of my brain rather than underneath. And that really I suffered no long-term health effects as a result of it. I've been left with this interesting scar. But
that's such a lovely way to catch it, an interesting scar. So a war wound of survival, which is...
That's right. That's lovely. Right. So, yeah, so that's one interesting... I mean, the other interesting fact, which I was going to mention, is that I was fortunate enough to visit or to witness two revolutions firsthand by the time I was 21. So I spent some time in Prague in 1989, yeah. And I was there for a few days during the Velvet Revolution and saw people, you know, gathering as they did in Wenceslas Square, which was amazing. And then in 1991, I was in Moscow during the August coup when Gorbachev was overthrown briefly. And then that coup was then overthrown by the people and Boris Yeltsin came to power. So it's two extraordinary events. So the second one nearly 30 years ago. And I was there for both of them because I was on theatre tours.
Good
while I was still at Cambridge. So that was pretty extraordinary, actually.
I know very much about revolutions, but the Velvet Revolution, as revolutions go, sounds about the campus one.
I think it was the gentlest one.
Yes,
the gentlest one. There was no shooting. There was no violence as there was in Romania. It was just people talking and people listening to one another. And that sort of sense of calm and quiet on the streets, but determination was amazing, absolutely amazing. The Moscow experience was quite different. That was more forceful. Amazing.
Amazing that you were such a man of your time in terms of the history of your timelines of being an actor. Fantastic.
Yeah, who knew?
So now, thank you for that wonderful downloading of the apples in your tree. And we've been talking about this anyway, but it's a beautiful segue. This is about alchemy and gold now, Paul Hill. When you are completely at purpose and in flow, and this is not at all arrogant, just name it for us. What's the alchemy and the gold that you'd love to bring when you're working with people in developing them?
I think just that sense of confidence that you can do it as well, right? Because my mantra to anybody would be, look, if I can do it and I struggle with technology, I struggle with all sorts of stuff, then you can as well. And so it links into the sort of motto or the moral, really, which is don't say no to stuff. Try it. Keep trying. Have a go. Don't close yourself down with restrictive ideas of yourself, because they really get in the way. Just let yourself do it and trust yourself to do it. That's really hard, but it comes with practice and it comes with working on it.
And there is just such a profound, it is the mindset of yes and, which I know we resonate with, but I just love that because that speaks to me and says yes and, just say yes more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can open up.
Say yes, go for it. If you're nervous about presenting, volunteer for a presentation, make yourself do it. The way my mother made me audition for that school play.
Yes. And there is that lovely quote, which is, if someone asks you to do something in life and you don't know how to do it, say yes and work it out later.
Absolutely.
I've seen that attributed to various people, but Richard Branson's one of the sources. Then there was also an interior designer whose name should have come to me then, but it didn't. But anyway, it's attributed to lots of people. But Abigail Ahern, that's who it was.
Oh, right. Brilliant.
Now we're bringing you anything else you want to tell us about alchemy or gold?
No, that would be the alchemy, that would be the gold.
Boom and gold. And now we're arriving at the point where I'm going to award you with a cake, Mr. Paul Hill, for doing us the courtesy of, you know, bathing us in your presence for this time. And this is another metaphor, storytelling metaphor, where you're now going to put a cherry on the cake. And the cherry is open to interpretation. This could be things like your favorite inspirational quote, the best advice you've ever been given, and you've talked about delicious stuff your mum gave you way back when, doesn't have to be again about her. Or it could be advice to your younger self. This is just a moment for you to leave us with a cherry on the cake. So how would you like to interpret that?
My mother gave me this wooden teddy bear just before, I think I was doing my A-levels. And there was a lot riding on my A-levels because I'd applied to Oxford and completely failed to get in. And I was very nervous about my A-levels. And she gave me this teddy bear and it was engraved with the slogan, "You can do it." and I kept that. I still have it, and it's really useful. It's really useful. Obviously, there's certain things where we've got to think, okay, well, I've tried and I've given that a go and now I will stop. But you can do it is really important. It's the kind of stuff that I'm saying to my own children when they're struggling with their homework, as we all do.
And I love
and that would be my cherry.
I love the fact it's a wooden teddy bear.
Wooden teddy bear with "You Can Do It" on it. He's sort of in the Amy Cuddy power pose. Not that Amy Cuddy was around at that point, but yeah, that's what he's doing. You can do it. I've still got it somewhere.
And do you know what? I would love you to send a photograph of it at some point because
I'll have to dig it up. I'm pretty sure that one of my daughters has it, so I will have to see if Zoe and Lois have got it. And
it's the wooden mantra that keeps on giving. And by the way, your mum beautifully just keeps on giving. In the story of what you've been telling us in your journey to now, I fully appreciate your father's been a wonderful influence in your life too. But I love the echolocation to your mum's wisdom.
Mm. Definitely. It's funny how the conversations keep bringing you back to what's important.
I just love the image of the wooden teddy bear. Please send a photograph of "You Can Do This." So if people would like to find out more about you, Paul Hill, where can we find out about you? Just go on the open road of where we can look to find out.
Well, you can check out my LinkedIn profile, but I need to update it. It's as people will look at the photograph will see that the photo is out of date. So that's work in progress. You can find out about me on probably the best place to find out about me is the Working Voices website, where there's some videos of me talking about stuff. Some done a while ago, some done more recently, and that probably gives the best overview of what I do. Still, I'm working on my own resources to publicise myself, but as you said earlier, Chris, I'm terrible at doing that
self promotion. Sincerely, I do have you to thank for the genesis of this idea, and I may be eternally grateful to you because I am getting on the open road with this, hoping that the archetypes that I'm stumbling upon are a bit like my own version of Desert Island Discs. Where
I think this is the closest I'm going to get to it, Chris. So thank you. My eighth record is
my eighth record is. And by the way, I did have a cheeky look at your Working Voices profile, and I love it. It says that you're available for large audiences, classrooms, and auditoria.
Oh, darling.
So you've obviously tweaked it with some delicious language as well.
I obviously did.
So this has been the Good Listening To podcast with the lovely Paul Hill, voice coach, lovely human being and actor, Paul Hill. Thank you very much indeed. And anything else you'd like to say, Paul?
No, thank you, Chris. I found that far more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be. And I knew I'd always loved talking to you, but it's the idea of having to sort of sit there and talk about yourself for 20 minutes
which is why I call it the Good Listening To rather than Welcome to the Dental Surgery.
It didn't feel like the dentist, so thank you, Chris.
A real pleasure and a privilege, Paul. Thank you, and I look forward to the next time I can give you a hug, and in fact I'll give you a kiss. So there you are.
Oh,
you're a wonderful man, and I'll see you soon.
See you soon, Chris.
Bye. So thank you for listening. That was Paul Hill, the lovely man and voice teacher. That was actually an episode from the archive, in that there's been a slight pause this week because I've been rustling under a tarpaulin, all set to launch the brand new thegoodlisteningtoshow.com website. Hurrah! So yes, if you would like to have a look at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website, there are details there of all the various series strands of how you too can get involved if you'd like to be in the show too. And don't forget, please, to review and like the Good Listening To Show, which is available wherever you get your podcasts, as well as being available here on the UK Health Radio Show each week. So yes, Chris Grimes is me. If you'd like to contact me about the show, chris@secondcurve.uk. And whilst I've got you, there's news of the Good Listening To Show going live as a theatre show as well on Friday the 28th of July at the Bath Theatre Royal, if you happen to be in the UK, in the southwest of England region, at the wonderful Bath Theatre Royal on Friday the 28th of July. The Good Listening To Show live with simultaneous streaming to Facebook and YouTube is going to be with Neil Malarkey from the Comedy Store Players, who's going to be talking about his new book, In the Moment, at 7 p.m.
and then award-winning actress and comedian Rosie Cavaliero happening at 9 p.m. on the same day. So it's two live recordings of The Good Listening To Show in front of an inviting audience, complete with audience Q&A. Hurrah, how exciting. So there's lots happening with the show. Don't forget, if you want to contact me about the show, chris@secondcurve.uk. And thanks, as ever, for listening. Tune in next week for more Stories from the Clearing. I've been Chris Grimes. You're awesome. And goodbye.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more Stories from the Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.